That was Four by John Cage, performed by the Duke Quartet, the violinists Louise Fuller and Rick Costa, the violist John Metcalf and the cellist Sophie Harris. You're listening to Here and Now on BBC Radio 3. I'm Ivan Hewitt, and with me in the studio is conductor Richard Bernas. On now to the late evening concert at the Cage Uncaged Festival, given at 10:15 this evening, so this really is hot off the CD burner. It was given in the Barbican Hall by the Guildhall School of Music and Drama Percussion Ensemble, directed by Richard Bengerfield, with sound projection and design by Sound Intermedia. What we're going to hear is a sequence of shortish pieces for all sorts of weird and wonderful percussion instruments. They really did make the most extraordinary sight and sound up there on the Barbican stage. There were thunder sheets, there were rice bowls, there were lion's roars, bull roarers, tin cans, and I don't know what up there. And the music itself is equally extraordinary. Now, I should tell you that the concert is designed as a continuous sequence with no pauses, but I'm not going to ask you to keep eight titles in your head. What we're going to do is hear them in two groups of four. The first group are all by Cage himself, and they all date from the late 30s or early 40s, starting with Imaginary Landscape, moving on to the first construction in metal, then the living room music, and ending with Credo in Us, or perhaps Credo in US, depending on which way you look at it. Now, Richard Bernas, obvious yeah. question. Why was Cage so fascinated in percussion for quite a long period in his early career?
Yes, this is what I might describe as the sort of heroic period of Cage's writing, when he actually goes through a phase of being deliberately innovative, very trailblazing, almost anarchic, as always, but it's heroic because, unusually for John's music, it's all entirely written out. It's all entirely determined or composed in the most conventional sense. And the reason why it's mainly for percussion is actually not a very glamorous answer, Ivan. It's dire economic necessity. He didn't have access writing such radical things to conventional musicians. And in fact, I think he deliberately avoided them because he didn't think it would be too fertile a ground. So he was able to find, through dancers he knew from working with the choreographer Merce Cunningham and fellow composers like the young Lou Harrison, he was able to find a sort of ensemble of people who would bang, scrape, and hit instruments
right.
in time.
So as long as they had a good sense of rhythm.
Exactly, and they could read basic notation, John would wheel them into percussion ensembles. I mean, all these pieces, I think, are for four or five instruments, four or five players, that is, and a conductor. And that was the basic format of his ensemble in, say, from 1939 to 1942.
Which, I suppose, bespeaks a great interest in rhythm and perhaps one should say durations as the basic building block of music at that time.
Well, it was also, you see, because he was collaborating so carefully with Cunningham and he was working on the same kind of rhythmic divisions that Cunningham brought to the composition of his dances. So it's all focused around dance counting and small rhythmic units, three, four, nothing more than six, alternating or being sequenced in very, very increasingly elaborate patterns.
Now, one thing I should point out is that it's not just percussion that we hear. There are a couple of pieces amongst this group of four where we hear, I suppose by our standards, rather primitive electronic devices as well. We hear
yes, that's interesting.
That, turntables. And,
yeah, in Credo in Us or Credo in US. Which is a kind of, it's a patriotic title, but it's also a satiric work. So it's, you can make up your mind how sincere the title is. But that, as well as the muted gongs and tin cans, also features a phonograph. John never thought that recordings were music. He had a very reductionist, Zen attitude. They were simply not music, but they could be used to produce sound. He felt that they were interesting if they were used in performance, but not that they should ever be thought of as an accurate representation of a musical event. And so this piece features a recording.
And the first of the pieces we're going to hear, The Imaginary Landscape, has a rather different use of electronics, doesn't it? There we hear sine wave generators, and we hear the kind of sounds that we think of as more electronic rather than phonograph.
Yeah. Well, I think, again, you know, it's not too difficult to find adequate sine wave operators, the same way that it's not impossibly difficult, if you have people with a good sense of rhythm, to train good percussionists. It's a question of economic necessity, but also there's the interest with electronics of going into the detail of sound, of being able to extend it for a very long time so that it can be examined microscopically, rather the way the very essence of the string quartet is examined in four that we just heard. And the piece that I really find the most enjoyable and the most interesting for the future is Living Room Music from 1940, because there the percussion instruments are furniture, books, paper, windows, walls, and doors.
It's real found objects.
Yeah, it happens in the living room, and it kind of, although it's very, very well notated, it actually anticipates all of the happenings of Oldenburg and Rauschenberg and
that were coming
Jasper
later.
Johns, yes, from the 1960s.
Well, let's hear them all now. And just to remind you of the pieces in order, we start with Imaginary Landscape number 3. That's the one involving the buzzers and the turntables. Then we hear a purely percussive piece, the first construction in metal.